follow this winding path. Willow trees, Stanley Cup favorites, and the power play's influence on the NHL's postseason. My favorite guy of all time, Darren Robert Pang, joins us in the middle of the second round on The Chirp with Darren Millard. This is outstanding.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
That's a disgrace! That's a disgrace! What a joke!
Heads up!
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
Hit him, light him up, light him up.
Yeah, nice hit! That's solid.
Jump right into it with the analyst from TBS, Turner, TNT, all the networks all combined. Here's Darren Pang with us as we move into round two. I've seen a couple of games so far. Before we get there, how did the balance of power change when Boston lost, Panger?
Oof. I mean, significant. I mean, you know, I think the anticipation, Mally, was Boston. You know, I mean, I couldn't wait for that first round series and you know, for a lot of different reasons. I mean, it's the Boston Bruins. I remember experiencing in the 95 lockout how great the Red Wings were, but I never saw that particular point. I was at ESPN and I think it was at that point, I think it was 95, Tom Mies and I were just covering the West and we never touched the East. Bill Clement and Gary Thorne did all the East. So we'd hear this report. So we talk about the two powers, which New Jersey wasn't a power. They were just a really good team. Detroit was a power. I mean, you know, they hadn't won a Stanley Cup since the 50s and a lot of pressure was on them. And I remember going through that and watching the disappointment of that team losing and how did they lose? The looks on their face were like, how did this happen? How did this neutral zone trap beat us? How did that team beat us? And then as years go on, you know, you tend to, from experience, just really observe. And so, you know, you get it to a game seven at home. I know you can say all the right things and you can say that, you know, this is what we worked hard for to get it to game seven, but game sevens cannot be that easy. I've never played in an NHL game seven. All I know is I was thinking to myself, Mally, and you being a former goalie as well, the only way for me to describe Jeremy Swayman that day is for me to put myself in his shoes. And all I thought of was wake up, get nervous, go to the rink, have a skate, have your pregame meal, have a nap, wake up, go to the rink, and throw up. And that's all I thought of all day long. Just like that, Mally. And that's what I would have done because I did that for my career. And I just kept thinking, he's being put in a tough spot here. You know, and then so you get to get, now they're out. Now it's gone. No, now it's game over because of this resilient group of cats from Florida. So that's remarkable. And then Tampa Bay's the other team, maybe too, Mally. Like many people thinking, hey, is there more lightning than that bottle? And can they reenact, you know, their unbelievable moments? And then Colorado was the other one. And then, you know, you go whoop, you know, and then knock them down. And now it's wide open. Goaltending's wide open. Teams are wide open. Lack of experience is wide open. I mean, I think this is going to be a great run. And I think we should really appreciate it instead of look back and think of the great teams or the great markets or TV ratings and all that, that may or may not be there.
So who do you think is the favorite?
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know either. And I've rattled my brain around it and tried to look objectively as I can because I've got my day job. It is really difficult. And I love to pay the mortgage. That's one of the things I do love to do. But Edmonton, Vegas going head to head, you've got two contenders there and then Toronto and then the upstarts.
Well, first of all, what you do is not a job.
It's a hobby. It's a fun hobby.
I mean, that's like me saying I play golf with the boys at the country club, but that's a job. You know what I mean? We love it. And you're great at what you do, buddy. And we had some good times together in that studio at Sportsnet together too. I'm going to look at it right now because I have to visually look at things to say, okay, where's the advantage if I can think of the advantage? Team and power play, Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
Skill level, Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, high-end, top heavy skill level that have added to it. I'll go to team defending, Stars and Ottinger, you know, and I know they gave up a few in that first one. Kraken forecheck like crazy. Hurricanes are probably, when I look at it, the model of everything you love, even with the injuries that they have, the way they play. Can they ramp it up and get it to another level? you know, that's yet to be seen yet with this group of players, but I happen to think they can. Panthers, absolutely resilient. Like there's a part of me that's looking at all these teams and I'm going, how can you not believe in a team that with 1 second left, Marchand's got a breakaway. The season is over for the Panthers. Bobrovsky makes a save. It's a walk-off home run. And he makes the save. And then they win game 6 and 7 in Boston. I mean, for me, resilience means everything. And I would have to say that Florida is the underdog of all underdogs for me to win it all. But I mean, I look at it, Jake Ottinger is my favorite goaltender. That's not personally, it's just the way he plays. I love him. I think he might have the edge in that department of all the guys. And then, so I'm all over the map on this. There's no clear cut winner here. There's no clear cut winner whatsoever.
And the teams that you like, that you've mentioned, all have reasons why I could poke holes in them too. Like there's areas where I could go, geez, I don't know about Toronto's goaltending, whether it can hold up long-term. Or you can talk about Florida. Can Bobrovsky keep doing it? But they're a President's Trophy winner from a year ago. They're not really a 17 overall team.
No, not at all. In fact, I asked Paul Maurice that prior to game 2 in Toronto, just about, is there any comparisons to a team that I was close to watching? That was the 2019 St. Louis Blues. You know, like many thought that, wait a second, they didn't overachieve to get to where they were. They underachieved to get to where they were.
That's a great explanation.
And then they found it. And you know, for the Florida Panthers, yes, they made some trades, but they brought in the most gritty player of that trade. I mean, no one's grittier than Matthew Tkachuk, and no one under pressure plays the same way as Matthew Tkachuk. Some guys are gritty and greasy, and then the pressure gets on them, and then somebody pokes them in the eyes and punches them in the nose, but he just stays the same way, and he drags everybody into it. But he's also a hell of a hockey player to go along with that. So he's not sideshow Bob. He plays hockey, and so you know that. So anyway, Paul Maurice thought there were some similarities a little bit, and he found that the Blues of 19 found their game faster than what the Panthers had to go through to get to where they are now. He believes now that they found their game, meaning, you know, you can look up and down the bench and you can correct things really, really fast with the group of players that you have because they're all in and they know how to fix the way they're playing. And so a lot of teams get in that trouble where they just can't do that quick enough and make the in-game adjustment quick enough to become a team again when they kind of come off the rails a little bit. So, but anyway, going back, you're right about the Florida Panthers, that the Devils are another, like there's another one right there. Like they just beat the New York Rangers. Pretty darn good accomplishment, but I don't think they're finished yet. You know, I think they've still got that youthful enthusiasm and naivety combined with really good playoff players in that lineup. And so that's also a unique matchup there.
Paul Maurice would have saw, I believe, St. Louis in 2019. He first faced round. Them in the first round series with Winnipeg. So
that's exactly right.
Some familiarity, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably one of the things that he learned from that Blues team, because that was close. And that Winnipeg Jet team, all they had to do was win game 5. And Jaden Schwartz scored, you know, late on a line change, a broken skate to Braden Schenn. Means Bozak jumps over the bench as a right-hand shot, goes to the corner and makes a pass that a lefty could not have made. Yeah. And it's tipped out of midair, and the series really did end right there.
That was such a brave call by Craig Berube to plan all that, to put all that into
great
order.
Great plan. See, what you do is you say to your most powerful forechecker, break a skate blade, hobble off the ice in the final seconds of a game, and I'll throw the righty out. No one told Bozak to go out. He was already over the boards. He knew what he wanted to do and how he was going to do it.
Is being naive the Devil's biggest strength?
I mean, maybe I would say maybe the Kraken and the Devils on that, you know, that side of it. I mean, playing a fast, ferocious game and not really, doesn't seem like they're thinking about too much on the negative side. They just keep plowing away. And, you know, until you get punched in the nose a couple of times and end up being down 2-0 or 3-1, I mean, that's when your locker room gets tested. And that's what's so impressive, Mally, about, you know, the big save on Marchand, but, you know, how did the Florida Panthers find that resolve against a team that's that good? And that's right. The great game of hockey is that you can do that. But again, with Seattle, I mean, man, they went 7 games. They beat the defending Stanley Cup champions. That's what I like about these stories is there's something with every single team that's made them more resilient and given them another layer of skin that they didn't have prior to the playoffs.
Do you like the influence of the power plays the last couple of years? Because this is really a 3-year trend that we've seen with high, high numbers.
Yeah, are you talking about that Oilers team?
That is sick.
Winnipeg
was great. They lost. Boston was great. They lost. The 6 teams have out of this world numbers right now.
Yep. It's I don't. This is just me.
Yeah.
And it's not that my theory is the right theory, but I've never believed that the power play should win you the Stanley Cup. Now I might be totally wrong, but as we go along, there's going to be fewer and fewer calls. It's just the way it is. It's just the battle. It's just the players, they're not going to have time to do any embellishing. They got to get up on their skates. They got to get back to the front of the net. They got to get up and play the game of hockey. And I think if you have a great penalty kill, and I'm saying 90% is phenomenal, and you got a goalie that stops 89% on the penalty kill and turns in a 95% even strength, and then you've got 5-on-5 numbers that are in the plus, you know, I don't mean +1 or +2, but once you get into that second round, if you're in that +8, +9, +10, that means you go to the next round, you're another +10, you're +20. Man, if your penalty kill is 89% and your 5-on-5 scoring goals for goals against is in the +20s, I guarantee you, you're winning the Stanley Cup. That's just for me. So I just think less and less difference making, I don't know how to describe that, but the power play will have less effect. Oh, that's a better way of describing it. See how I come up with these words like that? It's
just
amazing.
On the fly.
Wow. It's just like this.
Did you draw on those pennies behind you? Like great artwork wherever you're staying.
Yeah, I drew those today and that's what I get paid.
Yeah. In pennies?
Four pennies per game.
I don't know how you carry all those pennies around with you.
That's my ball markers on the golf course. So that when I'm putting.
What do you use as a ball marker?
I actually use a custom marker from a friend of mine at Meadowbrook Country Club. And it's got a Canadian flag on one side and it's got Darren Robert Pang on the other side.
Okay. So when you mark the ball, which is up, face up, and you switch it, whether your game's going good or bad and trying to change momentum.
No, I used to be, I used to be that weird when I played and I'm not that weird anymore. I got rid of that. I had to drive the same way. I had to drive the same way. I had to make the same turns. I had to tape the stick the same way. I had to do my skates up the same way. I had to throw up in the same toilet. I had to do this. I had to do that. After a while, I mean, honest to goodness, if I played 10 years in the NHL, I would be an absolute, it'd be a challenge for me every day. So I'm good. I don't do that as a broadcaster. I don't walk a certain way because it doesn't matter. I'm not playing the game. So I'm just broadcasting the game. But as a player, it was getting kind of ridiculous.
Really? So you've rinsed it all, even on the golf course? Because
all rinsed. No, doesn't really matter. And sometimes my mother passed away in January of 16. Mm-hmm. And my sister Sherry made these ball markers. And it's got a willow tree because she loved the willow tree at her country club. And it's got her initials on it. So when I'm on the road a lot, I take that. Sometimes I just have it in my wallet. I look at it and it's just think about your mom, you know. But I don't have it all the time. I don't want to lose it. So I don't. I'm famous at losing things. So I like to keep that close to me.
When you see a willow tree, do you think of mom?
Oh, all the time.
When you're just driving around?
No question. No question. Yeah. Yeah. That's no question cool. about it. Yeah. She sat on a bench at the country club and watched the ladies tee off, and she played every day anyway, but she was always by that willow tree. So
is that where you got it from? The golf bug from mom?
Yeah. Mom played all the time. Mom walked for it. My dad played. They got divorced when I was younger. I never played golf with my dad I asked him why not. And, you know, at that time too, just think about it, in the early to mid 70s, you know, young kids on the golf course, you know, you got these persimmon. It wasn't fun. I didn't want to go play golf. Like, honestly, I had no. So my dad's like, you do remember that you played lacrosse 24/7. Then you became a tennis player. And you played squash all the time, and then you played hockey. Like, golf wasn't really one of the things that you were going to go play at. So I didn't start playing golf till I was second year pro in Saginaw that I really played. And I had a teammate that Tom St. James was a really good player, and he was patient and helped me and got me clubs and did everything for me and taught me how to, you know, be calm under fire, to taught me how to, you know, play it. And it helped my hockey. You know what?
How?
It helped my hockey because I was also a little bit aggressive when I got mad. And one midget AAA tournament, we were playing the Little Caesars. John Van Beesbrook was in the other end, and, you know, they had some terrific players there, and they scored on me on a power play. And while they were celebrating in front of me, I chopped a couple of them down. You know, that, like, yeah, this, I mean, it was bad, right in the back of the knees, two guys crumbled, like taking down the redwood.
You got
tree.
Two?
And yeah, it was a good swing. And, I got a 5-minute major, was not ejected, but they scored on the power play. And I think the word around was, can he control his temper? And the question, if I had to answer that question, it was no. And the problem was giving up a bad goal or a goal and then getting so angry that you gave up another goal. And that's not good to have in your resume. So I started playing golf, and I found that you hit a bad shot, I try to break a 3-wood. Well, that doesn't work either. And so I had to find a way to just calm everything down very fast, like in 15 seconds. And I learned how to do that through the help of some people in Ottawa and training. And now I don't get rattled very much.
Well, your Ottawa teammate, Bruce Cassidy, is having a good run right now. And
yes, he is.
You've known him forever from your junior hockey days. What's impressed you the most about what he's done from the start in Vegas to where his team's at now?
Yeah, and pro hockey too at Mally.
Right.
Five different teams. Bruce Cassidy.
Really?
Bruce Cassidy and I were teammates on. And
well, I just think of the 67s.
Yeah. And we won two championships together. So we, you know, both Chicago. So we played in Chicago. And it's funny, he was called up for like 2 months, and I won Rookie of the Month in the NHL. Like, every time Bruce Cassidy was on my team, good things happened to us. And so we won a Turner Cup in Indianapolis with a great group of players, including Daryl Sutter as the head coach. We played in Halifax, Saginaw, Indianapolis, Chicago, and Ottawa. So we do go a long way. And I love that guy to death. And I love talking hockey and life with Bruce. He's a good golfer, but he's an analyst. Like, he thinks of things. He thinks of other sports. I think he could be a coach or a broadcaster for any sport that's out there, because he's a great passion for them. And he's not just one dimensional, but, you know, what he's done, it puts him on the map again, as a great coach and a coach of the year in the NHL. You know, I think we all agree that Jim Montgomery is going to take that Jack Adams. I just think that he coaches the game in its present self very, very well. He's had great coaches like Brian Kilray. I know Daryl was an influence for him. Probably Bob Pulford was an influence for him. But he doesn't let the game get away from him. And sometimes some players can't handle that. You know, I mean, that's what you're in. You're in the now business. And what can we do right now to change the momentum of this game and get it going our way? And I think with the goaltending question marks, the injuries, I think he has done a magnificent job. It was a great hiring by the Vegas Golden Knights. And obviously I supported it 100%. As soon as I heard it, I was really excited for Bruce.
You got to get out and hang out with him then, because I can't believe he's not big call in your schedule with the good things that happen when you guys are hanging out together.
Yeah. Yeah. But then he'll say that I was kind of with him on that game 7 too. The great thing about friendship, I was saying this morning at the morning skate, is the people that are calm under fire. And I've got a lot of friends that are like that, that no matter what the situation and the pressure that they're in, it's like, no, we're going out for a glass of wine, or we're going to go see each other. And it happened after game 2, Stanley Cup final. Bruce and I talked, and they were staying at a hotel close to where I was. And he said, hey, after the game, let's meet. I'll have a nice bottle of wine for us. I said, gee, that's fantastic. I call him after the game. They lost the game. And I'm thinking to myself, like everybody else would be thinking, okay, well, maybe next time.
Yeah.
Bruce is like, where are you? And I said, well, I'm just coming back. And I wasn't sure if I was going to bug you guys. He goes, I got a seat at the table here for you. He says, I got a nice big glass of wine. We're waiting for you. And I said, who? And he's like, and it was the whole group, management, Jeremy Jacobs, son.
Wow.
It was the coaches. It was everybody. And I just plunked myself down. We had a glass of wine and talked hockey. And And their even keeledness in that series also taught me a lot too, because I think too many teams and players and people get so high and yes. so low and so high. And that, you know, you and no, and then that Bruce, I'll never forget it, because it was a really enjoyable evening. And I know that they were disappointed that they didn't win that game. And but there he was, you know, as dependable as ever. And there we were having a nice big glass of wine again.
Sometimes I think we just believe that they're so hyper-focused that they won't yeah. have room for other stuff.
It's a good point, Mally. It is a good point. You don't know until, and you can't assume yeah. until you see them in that situation.
Before we go, depth against the Stars in Bruce's series against Jay Woodcroft. We all want the Stars. I love that Bruce admits that. He would love the Stars, but it's an interesting contradiction.
Oh, boy. It's a heck of a matchup. Like,
Draisaitl and McDavid played 9 minutes in the third period of yeah. game one.
Yeah, it's a more well-rounded team, mm-hmm. you know, Edmonton is, than what, you know, I think when we look at Toronto, when we look at Edmonton, I'll use those as comparisons because you look top heavy, O'Malley, you look, but it's not that way anymore. And it's not that way with Edmonton. I know they played 9 minutes and they're phenomenal yeah. players. And at one point I'm thinking, is McDavid
they were down
hurting?
To 10 forwards too. So,
and there you go. And they're down yeah. to 10 forwards. So, but the one thing that impressed me last year in the conference final, when Leon Draisaitl had a high ankle sprain, do you remember? Remember yeah. he was kind of hobbling around? Yeah. But man, when the game was on the line, like he digs in and he can go, he manages his ice really, really well. So if he plays a minute and 42 second shift, he knows how to manage it from board to board and net to net incredibly well. And so that's how he's able to play big minutes like that. But I mean, how do you stop those guys? You know, Alex Pietrangelo has had great experience in that.
Yeah.
McNabb has. They've gone against great players their whole lives. And there are going to be some nights that it just doesn't happen. And everything you do is wrong and everything they do is right. And then there's some nights where you can see it in the opposition's eyes. You can see it that they're getting not frustrated to the point of losing, you know, their game, but you know that they're going to the bench and they're shaking their head and they're slamming the door. And that's when you've got them for a little bit anyway. And I think that's what makes it great. We've got a lot of teams that are unknowns, but you still have to have star players. I mean, that's, you still win championships. You win it on grit and defending and goaltending, but those star players get the puck on their stick for 1 second and they're the difference in a game. Whereas a fourth liner can have 12 shots on goal. And I know this from experience, and you're going to stop everyone. And a top end player gets it on his stick for 1 second and it's in the net, out of the bar, and thanks for coming. Game over.
Yeah. Rangers are out. Gerard Gallant's taking heat. Is that fair?
No, that's not fair at all. No, I don't get it. You know, I really don't get it. Like, there's just a part of me that just says sometimes, like, you're not going to win every single year. Like, sometimes the other team is a really good team. Like, I think that's a real slap in the face by the questions asked to Gerard Gallant.
Yeah.
You know, to Lindy Ruff and New Jersey. Like, that's a great team that they've got over there. It's been a well-oiled machine. And they're good, like, not just good young players. And it's not a rebuild. Somebody mentioned the other day that this is the way to rebuild it. Wait a second. It's yeah. been 10 years in the making. It's been number one overall picks, yeah. number four overall picks, number blah, blah. You know, like, I mean, come on. I mean, it's a great story right now, and I'm taking nothing away from it. But this isn't a rebuild that just went like that. This is a rebuild of empty buildings and broken promises. And I'm giving you some Bruce Springsteen kind of loving right
there. This is good.
And, you know, and Baby We Were Born to Run. But you know, then you bring it, you know, now you bring it in, and now this is where they're at. And did they think they were going to be where they're at before the playoffs started? I'm not sure if they did, you know, or if they were, but they went all in on Timo Meier. And that told me a great deal about where they think they can get to. And so, but anyway, going back to Gerard, I just find that so totally unfair when a coach is given everything he's got all year long, and to have the lack of respect for knowing how hard everybody's worked to get there, and to lose in seven. I don't know. There's another time and a place for that, in my opinion.
But he wants to get to the glory days, right? I'm just trying to pick up on your theme. That's all.
Yeah. It was a baseball player. I knew that baseball player. He was back in high school, I believe.
When you're on the road, do you take a picture? How do you remember your room number?
I take a picture on my, I take a picture on my phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wrong all the time, buddy. I'm wrong all the time. I go to the wrong floor. I don't have my key. I forgot my phone. So I took a picture of the, don't have my phone. Where that? Oh, it's in the car that I just left. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a disaster. I ask somebody, what floor are we on? They'll say 9. And I'll say, I got a fighting chance. I said, did you go right or left last time? They said, I went left. I said, I'm right. I got to go right. I know where I'm going to be then. And then I find it.
That's the hardest thing. The most underappreciated aspect of being on the road is whether you go right or left off the elevator.
Big time. Absolutely. I want a dead end on one side so I know it's okay. And I need a planter or something there that tells me that that's the way to go.
So if we have difficulty as broadcasters, why is it so easy for the teams on the road right now?
Oh, good segue.
Thank you.
Really good segue.
I've been working on this.
You know what? I don't think it's easy, you know, but it's, they've been successful.
Yeah.
I think, let's take a team like Toronto. They weren't a team in the past. I don't think, from what I gather, from what I hear, that you get ready for a playoff run and you're all together. You're all going for dinner, you know, but they broke through this analytics analysis, in my opinion, and they brought three guys that probably aren't universally loved by analytics. But they've got big hearts and they're social ambassadors and they're really good players under fire. That's Achari and that's Ryan O'Reilly and that's Luke Shen. And you know who the last guys off the ice are? It's Luke Shen and it's Ryan O'Reilly. And you know who hot stoves with everybody there, no matter who's there? Those two guys do. So why are they, you know, why did they have success on the road? Why did they win three overtime games on the road? I believe they're building something and it's called team chemistry. You know, and they're going out for dinners and they're being together and they're, you know, they look like they're having fun. They don't look like a group that's a little stressed, you know? So I think, especially if you've got a veteran laden team too, you've got to hang out together. And where's the most fun? The most fun is being on the road in these beautiful hotels that they have. If you want to go hide in a room, they've got conference rooms, they got TV set up. You want to watch hockey, but you're going to be together. And that's, you know, I think more than anything else, that's a big part of, you know, winning games is to have that harmony together. But is it an aberration? I don't know, Mally. From year to year, it's all different. Some guys gag all over themselves on the road, can't come up with the big performance, and there goes that theory. And some guys excel on the road, and some teams excel on the road. It's us against them, and they battle the adversity like the Florida Panthers have, like Toronto has so far. I know it's early, but those are good examples of teams.
I love my Luke Shen. And one of the great things in the big conference room that teams have, putting competitions. Yep. I see you just popping in there, putting competitions. Because I've seen it when we were working together in the hallway, putting competitions.
I do that a lot, don't I?
You do. They'll be calling to the set. There's 2 minutes left in the period. We're down to a best of three here.
I might. Well, you know what? I'll see what kind of pigeons are out there. See if I can't rally some of them up and sneak into their games. Maybe there's an admission price for some of these teams and I can just pay the initiation fee and
get in.
That means I got to bring my own putter because mine's shorter and it's flat instead of upright. There could be some issues here, but maybe because I'm on the chirp, maybe you can FedEx those. Ship sticks them to me. That should be a sponsor. Ship sticks my putter for me.
Honestly, Ship Sticks is great. You're getting calls, so we'll let you go.
Good. No. I hate to, Robert De Niro told me never to name drop, but I'll call Gretz back. It'll be
Tell Biden you're busy right now. Okay.
It was the dentist. I got to be all
really
totally transferred. The dentist. I got an appointment when I get back to St. Louis.
You're awesome. Favorite teammate of all time. And I say that sincerely, and I say it to you every time because I mean it. There's a picture on my wall of you and I watching a hockey game. I'll never forget it. You're the best. Thank you for doing this, buddy.
Yeah, thank you, Mally. It's a great being with you, and hopefully I'll see you soon, okay, pal?
So just a little background. Panger and I worked together a few years ago at Sportsnet doing some national broadcasts in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and we had a riot, mainly because he's a riot. And we also worked a little bit with PJ Stock during that time, and we were like the secondary team or the third team. But by the playoffs, end of the first round that year, we were like the number one team. because people wanted to work with us because we were so much fun. And that was all because of Darren Pang. We had some cool moments, but he was always in the hallway practicing his putting. And the producer, it was the only issue the producers had with them. Matt Marstrom was the producer, that Panger would never be on set on time because he was having putter competitions with anybody that walked by. It didn't matter if it was catering. It didn't matter if it was somebody from the other crew. It didn't matter if it was a news anchor, because we were in a CBC building at the time, a news anchor, a reporter walking by. Panger would have a putting competition with them. Or he would convince PJ Stock to be part of it. And PJ can't golf to save his life. Like if golf was swimming for PJ, he'd drown in 2 seconds. It was just crazy how bad it was. But Panger loved the competition, so he would beat up on him. Best teammate, and watching him go through the different, his mom's passing, a knee replacement, and the guy was always so upbeat. And what you see, that's not an act, folks. What you see is incredible. And then to hear him break down the Stanley Cup playoffs with that experience is really neat to dive into. So appreciate him in the middle of the Toronto series. He talked about Boston being out and how that changes the balance of power. There's an ability to compare Boston to other great teams who have stumbled in the postseason following a historic year. Think about Detroit. Think about Tampa Bay. This is totally different, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Those teams had core that was building towards something. Boston, more of last dance. Like, nobody expected this from Boston this year. They found it. It was incredible to watch. I give them all the credit in the world. But there's so many issues going forward with age and career status and salary cap. I don't see it. And that could be a team that is going to be challenged to make the playoffs next year. Like, Florida was this year, President's Trophy winner, to just squeaking in. Doesn't mean you can't get something done, but I don't see Boston turning it into multiple championships or a dynasty-type run like Detroit did, like Tampa Bay did. They fell to the Columbus Blue Jackets, found a way to turn it around. Detroit did back in the day. Colorado had stumbles. They turned around and won a championship. Very different scenarios. Now, everybody wants to get, because we're now into the second round, Conn Smythe Trophy favorites. Who's emerging? There's no doubt Matthew Tkachuk is like the darling of all of our eyes, being able to just pull his team into the second round of that series against Toronto. You have a wonderful performance that's taking place right now by Leon Draisaitl. Incredible. But as far as under the radar, I don't know whether there is anybody. There's different names. There's the odd goaltender that you can throw out. But I'll say, of the 8 teams that are left, 4 of them could win the Stanley Cup, and people will be so conflicted as far as who their best player is, the Conn Smythe Trophy could come from the losing team, like Rick McLeish, like the great goaltenders of like Ron Hextall did it back in the day. They're just conflicted. If there's nobody standing out, then you go to the other team and you give them a bit of charity, something to walk away with. So I think that you've got 2 at the very top and then a whole bunch left to go. 4-goal games by one player. It happened on back-to-back nights. Try sitting down with somebody after you listen to this podcast and explain to them the sport of hockey like they have no idea what the sport of hockey is. And tell them, in back-to-back nights in the Stanley Cup playoffs, players scored 4 goals in a game, and they lost the game. It doesn't make any sense how it happened with Pavelski and Draisaitl. It was just so puzzling that occurred. And it's mind-boggling that, one, they scored all their team's goals. But the other part was, and this is a great commentary on our game, both teams scored those 4 goals. The team scored 4 goals and lost. That was never the case before. Never mind the same person scoring 4 goals. And what do you do as a player? You sit there. Like, you've just... Draisaitl, one of the great accomplishments in Edmonton Oilers offensive history. Think about that. And he's standing there, and he's got to say, we didn't win the game. There's got to be a party going. I had my guy. I did my part. I'm going to enjoy this. Like that's the way I would be. I'm very selfish in that regard. I would be like, hey, I did my part. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm sad because we lost the game, even though I scored four goals. I'd be like, I was awesome tonight. I own this. The rest of the guys got to jump on board. But that's just me. That's why I host a podcast solo, because I'm the guy. I got my guy with Bob Bender. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Darren Robert Pang. I hope you enjoyed this episode, from the interesting, cool personal stories to the deep dive in the Stanley Cup playoffs and how we remember which rooms we're in when we're on the road changing hotels day to day. We'll talk to you next week on The Chirp with Darren Millard.